Hello, everybody. Second time back. It's Alan, and it's the Vox Pop. WYAMC's live daily afternoon call-in talk show. After weeks of deadly violence in the streets of Kiev, ousted President Viktor Yanukovych is on the run, and the country is teetering on the edge of economic collapse. Political parties are scrambling to reach a deal to agree on a prime minister, but a firm course change in Ukraine westward and turning away from Moscow would have momentous consequences for the balance of power in Europe. It is said. I'm not as sure about that. But anyway, the move would propel the continent's second largest country into the orbit of the 28-nation European Union rather than Vladimir Putin's Kremlin. As we await further developments in Eastern Europe, what is your take on Ukraine and its implications its revolution will have on the world should we get further involved? Call us 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. I'd like to hear from you. So, you've heard from me. Now I want to hear from you. You know, Vladimir Putin is an interesting guy. Clearly, he sees it in his interest to be able to return what was the Soviet Union, where he was once a KGB colonel, into its prominence and to have better relationships and an ownership of people within its own sphere of influence. Obviously, Putin has to decide what he wants to do. In the meantime, on another level, the U.S. military economy has come into some debate, and that is the question is, if you don't have an enemy, how can you have an army? And the Democrats, perhaps looking towards the Republican response, trying to close down domestic programs, has said, let's have fewer people in the army, fewer weapons. And of course, that is going to bring back tremendous pushback. So the question is, do we need an enemy? If we need an enemy, how does it fit with the whole Ukraine situation and Putin? And of course, we know that when the Hungarians were revolting, they counted on the Americans to come in and help them at the moment that they needed to. What if Putin were to go across the border? What if he were to take back, let's just say, the industrial area, which is closest to Russia? What would the United States do? Should we do anything? Should we come in and help people who are looking to make further gains with the European market and community? So that's what I want to ask you about. Let's go to David in Germantown. All right, David, you're on the air. What do you think?
Hello, Alan. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, thank you. I have a very simple proposal that would play to Mr. Putin's sense of macho manliness, which is, and he loves taking off that shirt. We know this. I suggest that he get into a ring, shirtless, and square off against Vitali Klitschko, winner take all.
Well, it ain't going to happen, but seriously, what do you think ought to happen?
I don't think we can go in. I think it's another mare's nest. I'm fascinated at how touched I am by this Ukraine thing. I'm devouring the news on it, and it's deep to me. And maybe that I have people that come from that area. I don't know. We can't go in, and I don't think Putin can go in.
Well, why would Putin hesitate?
I think that it's a can of worms for him, too.
How so?
There's going to be horrible carnage if he goes in.
Wait. He would go into the area, which is basically Russian in orientation. You remember that Stalin put all of those bodies into these countries that he was taking over. And so you've got an area which is pretty predominantly Russian at this stage of the game, or has an awful lot of Russians there.
And it is the east and the south is Russian, yes.
Yes, and it is the industrial section, so he has a lot to gain from doing it. He also has to say, to his people, you know, this is Russian patriotism and we have to do this and this is wrong. Well, I think he has fewer things to worry about than Obama does.
Well, look, it's in his best interest to have the Ukraine stay one nation, to have to tear the Ukraine apart, which his interference would do.
David, isn't part better than none?
I'm sorry, say again?
Isn't part of the Ukraine better than none of it? In other words, right now, the country as a whole is going to go towards the EU folks. Putin knows that. He's in a bad spot. It looks like he's a loser. He brings his troops in and he goes into the and takes part of it as opposed to all of it. At least he has part of it and an important part of it.
I don't think that it stands up to world scrutiny well. I think he's very sensitive about his image.
And really?
The image of being a bully and a brute. Yeah, no, I really do.
See, he's been a bully and a brute all along, and more so. It doesn't seem to worry him at all.
I don't know. I don't feel it imminent. I hope I'm right.
Right, too, by the way. Just for the
I know.
Yeah.
But, you know, other than this boxing match, which I think solves everything very cleanly.
Sure.
I have no solid offers for how to deal with this, and I don't think we can go near that. I think our thing—it's clear over the years. Any kind of intervention that we try is just a flypaper.
Yeah, well, it's clear, David, that Obama feels some of the same thing because we're getting the message out there that Obama is looking at this thing askance. On the other hand, he puts the U.S. ambassador standing next to that former president with his standing really closely and showing and solidifying one picture being worth a thousand words. Hey, David, we got a lot of people on the phone. We're going to let somebody else have a chance. Okay.
Happy to talk to you. Thank you, Alan.
Thanks,
goodbye.
David, for calling.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's go to Dennis in Kerhonkson. Dennis, you're on. Hello, Dennis.
Hello,
Dennis. Oh, sorry. You know what?
It's, I got RJ.
RJ. My fault. I picked the wrong thing. We'll go to Dennis next. Go ahead, RJ. You go next.
I just think that based on the history of that part of Europe, that Russia is going to eventually, maybe probably sooner than later, put their force into organizing that country how they want it.
Well, RJ, you're disagreeing with David, which is fine. B, you're saying sooner than later, which is certainly true. You wouldn't want to wait 5 months and then go in. You'd go in fast, and you'd say, and they're putting out the word all over the place that they're not happy at this stage, so you'd go in fast. What would prevent him from going in, do you think, RJ?
I can't almost, as far as Putin goes, I can't, unless some kind of leader emerges that is acceptable to Russia. I don't think that Russia is going to be scared of the United States or NATO or anything like that, because I don't think that they'd have reason to be scared of them, because I don't think that they're going to do anything to help Ukraine as far as, like, militarily.
Uh-huh.
And I know that Putin is somebody who really feels sad that the Soviet Union broke up, and Ukraine is probably the most closest part of the old Soviet Union to Russia, and culturally and economically.
Okay. Hey, RJ, we're hitting a break, and we'll have to leave it at that with you, and I thank you, and I think you make a very good case. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, bye. Let's see here. It's we're going to take a short break, but then we'll come back and we'll put Dennis back on the air. I'm sorry, Dennis. I apologize. And we'll be right back.
Support for WAMC goes to Smith College Museum of Art, presenting The Eye is a Door, landscape photographs by Ann Whiston Spurn, now on view, exhibition-related programs, and more. smith.edu/artmuseum for details. Mohonk Preserve, New Paltz, presenting the Rock the Ridge 50-mile challenge for runners, walkers, hikers on May 3rd, sponsored by I Love New York and Ulster County Alive. RockTheRidge50.org for registration. Alarms of Berkshire County, offering full-service residential and commercial security and life safety monitored systems based on individual or corporate needs for nearly 35 years. AlarmsofBerkshireCounty.com. In the Preservation League of New York State, Albany, New York, protecting New York's historic buildings, districts, and landscapes since 1974. PreserveNYS.org.
Wow, we're counting down and every phone is ringing off the hook, which is great. Love it when that happens. Okay, Dennis from Kerhonkson, will give you your long-awaited chance, Dennis, and I apologize.
That's no need to apologize, Alan. Thank you. I think it's a very important conversation. Thank you for sponsoring this. You know, I know that you are well aware that politics makes strange bedfellows, and if there was ever a case where that's true, I think this is one. A lot of people might not know, I'm from, Ellenville, Kerhonkson area. Kerhonkson is the home to the Ukrainian National Association, Soyuzivka, which is one of the largest Ukrainian ethnic groups in the United States.
Fascinating. I didn't know that, Dennis. Thanks for telling us.
And
appreciate
as a result of that, I've lived here my whole life. I have many, many good Ukrainian friends who are almost unanimously in support of the opposition forces and the ouster of Yanukovych.
Well, that's not surprising, considering they're in the United States and not in Russia.
That's correct.
Right.
That is correct. But these are people who understand the history of, you know, the Ukraine and all of the issues relating to, Prussia, Russia, the Soviet Union, the Nazi Germany and all of that. And that's why I bring this up. The U.S. ambassador to the Ukraine, Jeffrey Pyatt, is Jewish and is ardent Zionist, actually. And I think we just need to be careful about making any judgments, and most importantly, or more importantly, we need to be aware of the larger context, so that if we're going to render any opinions or express any support one way or the other, that we don't wind up finding ourselves in a situation where we wind up regretting, you know, having done that. The Ukrainian nationalists that the United States has been inciting to violence and, advocating for the overthrow of the Ukrainian government have a very close historical connection to the original organizations, the Organization of Ukrainian Nationalists that was founded by Stefan Bandera in the 1930s, and which organization made common cause with Nazi Germany, with Hitler, in their struggle, unified struggle to against the Soviet Union. It was shortly after the Soviet Union was expelled from the Ukraine that Hitler incarcerated those same Ukrainian nationalists in his effort to suppress the Ukraine. So what we have here is a situation where the organizations that are active in the Ukraine now are the follow-on or the descendants from organizations that in their inception were complicit, frankly, in Nazi Germany's
Okay, but wait a second, Dennis.
Go ahead.
This is very interesting stuff, and
I
certainly understand exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
Nevertheless, there is an issue, I think, about what would you be saying to German politicians today? You come out of directly from Nazi Germany, or you think there's a difference?
No,
anyways,
I don't think
that. Would you hold them responsible in the same way you're holding?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
Absolutely not. The point was about the strange bedfellows. The point is that the United States and Western Europe are using radical right-wing Ukrainian nationalists to gain their advantage, and very, very, successfully.
Then why do you think Obama seems to be holding off? I mean, the signals from the White House are, you know, I don't want anything to do with this, really.
I think that any time I think that it's very clear to Obama and everybody in the administration and in the Pentagon and in NATO that that they have the upper hand now, and that Putin is on the ropes, and that there is no reason to force the issue right now any more than it already has
okay,
been.
Okay, so
I
let
think
me,
that,
Dennis, let me ask you this: if Putin goes over the border, brings his tanks, his ammunition, his the rest of it over the border, takes a portion of the country, what should the United States do in your mind?
Okay, well, he won't do that. That's my absolute like firm opinion about that. That Putin is not that stupid. I'm going to let other people talk. I just need to say one other thing.
Sure.
That this whole thing really comes down to, we need to put it in a larger context, and that was really the whole reason for this and the strange bedfellow analogy. And that is what this really comes down to. And you're gonna have to do a little research and to understand what this is, which I have done.
No, I'm aware of what the Ukrainian position was in Hitler era.
Yeah.
I really am. And
I'm sure you are.
And I have debated this with a number of my Ukrainian friends, really, and really have. But who all say that was then and this is now?
Right. I agree, but that's why we need to bring this into the current context, and that is the issue of the ballistic missile defense system that the United States is building in order to gain nuclear primacy over the Soviet Union. And if you don't put this conflict in that perspective, then you're really, I think, missing the point. That's really the critical issue here.
Dennis, you have made your point. I thank you, and I appreciate your call very much. It certainly added a dimension we didn't have otherwise. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
1-800-348-2551. We'll go to Olga. Okay. Olga is on number four. Okay, number four. Olga, you're on.
Hello.
Hi, Olga.
Hello. I was born in Kiev. My family dates back like 800 years in Kiev.
Right.
And we are all Russian Orthodox. And all the east of Ukraine is Orthodox, and Crimea is all Orthodox, and we're with the Moscow Patriarchy by choice, and the West is the Uniat. You know, they were under Austria and Poland, and they were fighting, Ukrainian Cossacks were fighting the Poland, you know, for Orthodoxy, because they didn't want the Uniat. Now, I feel this is being ignored in this country. You know, it's not just a matter of Putin, Obama, or some other EU leader. It's the people there. Now, those Orthodox will not want the Uniat to be in power. That I am 100% sure.
Well, where were they during the great demonstrations?
They were not demonstrating, Orthodox.
Well, how come it seemed that there were so many people on one side of this and so few on the other?
They don't demonstrate, but that doesn't mean that they're going to accept whatever the outcome the Uniats want.
Okay, so what happens?
There may be a civil war.
Is there any...
Or there may be a cessation. You know, they want to separate.
Olga, is there any, you know, nascent, you know, examples of that you can give us in terms of proof that there may be a civil war? It doesn't seem that way. In Egypt, you had one side, you had the other side. You don't see that here.
Yeah, but I think that they are so firm, those Orthodox. you know, that until they're really pushed, they're not going to respond, but they will respond. They will not want to be under the UNIAT.
Okay.
They cannot, they don't even look at them as the same people.
I don't want you to take this the wrong way, but you came here, you're in the States. Does that change your views, which clearly seem to be leaning towards the anti-UNIAT, as you say?
Yeah, no, I'm still anti-UNIAT.
And could you just give us a little bit more about your definition of the UNIAT?
Well, they're the ones that Poland forced them to become, accept the Pope, and they are Greek. The other name for them is Greek Catholic or Greek Orthodox. Mm-hmm. No, not Greek, but Greek Catholic.
Okay.
They accept the Pope, and the Orthodox do not, you know.
Well,
and they feel a more allegiance and compatibility with the Russians or any other Orthodox that do not accept the Pope.
Okay, listen, you've given us a perspective. I can't tell you how much I appreciate your calling, and call again, okay?
Okay,
thanks.
Thank you.
Bye. Okay, so let's go to Dave in Johnstown.
Oh,
Dave,
hi.
You're on.
I'm going to make a proposition. Estranged bedfellows, but not Nazis. I don't believe in any of all that stuff. Listen, if I were a president, I would just make a friend with Putin. And I said, listen, let's divide this country up. Olga's right. They may have a civil war. If the Kiev bunch, they want to be part of Russia, let them be part of Russia. Let the others become part of Poland. I mean, my God, you know, avoid, you know, bring a little peace and common sense here.
Now, that would be a huge victory for Putin, wouldn't it?
Well, who cares? I don't care. I'm thinking of the people. We don't want more wars. I'm sorry. I'm just proposing it. Thank you very much.
No. Hey, thank you for the call, Dave. Woo. Let's go to Eric in Saratoga. Eric in Saratoga, you're on.
Alan, I think the thing that people don't understand is Putin already has Ukraine by the throat. Owing Gazprom $1 billion for their gas bill, owing them for their transportation bailouts, owing them for their superstructure bailouts. All he's doing is just waiting it out to be able to go in and say, I am economically repossessing the country. That's his biggest thing. He doesn't care about anything else. He wants it for what it is, and that's control of Europe by the gas pipeline.
Do you think there's, Eric, interesting, and you're not alone in that thought. However, do you think it's $1 billion is something that, with all its might and everything else that the Western bloc can't come up with in order to bail them out?
But it's not just, it's the $1 billion for the gas bill, but he's using that as an excuse to be able to control that section that goes into Western Europe. I mean, remember, we went through this already with him cutting off the tap of the gas.
So how does it play out?
Well, Obama is not going to do anything. The EU is going to step in, offer a bailout, and that will be where Putin steps in and says no, and that's when you're going to see him come in and take control of it or shut off the gas until Europe gives up.
With troops?
No, I don't think he'll use troops. I think what he's going to do is just starve it. He'll just tighten that noose around them economically and socially, and we'll just, well, his blustering, and like your one caller said there, he'll take his shirt off, rattle his, you know, his bones a little bit, and, you know, eventually they, you know, we'll jump back and say, oh, you know, we don't want to get involved in it. We don't want another Kosovo. We don't want another, you know, boots on the ground Somalia embarrassment for anything.
Well, maybe you're right. Time will tell. Thank you, Eric. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. 1-800-348-2551. Jim. And by the way, you can just email us at boxpop@wamc.org. And those go quicker because we don't have to talk to anybody. We just read them and see whatever's going on. Okay, and we do have a couple of free phones right now, so it's a great time to call. All right, we have one free phone now. Let's go to Jim in Peru. Okay, Jim?
Alan, how are you?
So far, so good. How are you?
Good. As a third-generation Ukrainian, You know, I this is so much similar to what happened in our country in the 1800s with the war between the states. I mean, you've got the western part of the Ukraine that is leaning more towards Europe and the eastern part towards Russia. And, of course, Putin will have some say in this because he's gotten some very positive publicity from the Olympics in Sochi.
Now, what about your family, your third generation? Where are they in this thing? Olga called before, and it was clear, you know, she was with that Russian side.
Well,
at least I think so.
My family came from Belarus,
right?
And landed at Ellis Island, and I followed very closely the developments in the Ukraine since Mikhail Gorbachev, you know, in a sense, dissolved the Soviet Union. And in fact, Gorbachev spoke recently, I think in South America or Central America, about the Ukrainian situation. And I think what needs to be done is that two groups got to sit down and talk. I just don't think that Putin is looking to looking for a fight.
And you don't. I'm sorry. I didn't get that. You don't, or you do think he's looking for a fight?
I don't think Putin is looking for a fight.
Okay.
Over the Ukraine, and I think what happens is civil minds need to sit down and just discuss the Ukrainian situation. And that's, you know, look at the war between the states. I mean, we went to war, the North versus the South, and I'd hate like hell to see that happen in the Ukraine where you got the East versus the West.
Okay. Hey, Jim, thanks for the call. Appreciate it very
much. You're welcome, Alan.
Yeah,
bye. Take care.
Yeah. Okay, and we'll now go to Tom in Amherst. I love Amherst. Do you know that, Tom? Delighted you're with us.
Hi, Alan. I don't know enough about the situation to give a thorough analysis, but there is a precedent in Czechoslovakia where the country eventually divided into two countries, and I'm wondering if that's a possibility for the Ukraine.
Well, I think anything is a possibility. My own opinion is I don't know enough about it, but I think anything is a possibility right now. How do you think this plays out?
Well, I don't know. I don't remember how much turmoil there was when Czechoslovakia broke up.
Yeah. Well, you divided two different groups, and you know, then you got these two countries. And but the question is, how would that happen here? In other words, what would the mechanics be? Do you think?
I don't know. What were the mechanics in Czechoslovakia?
You're asking the wrong guy. Okay, but let's assume first. Somebody may call and tell us. But let's assume for a second that Putin doesn't come in. Don't you think that the likelihood of anything like that happening are almost nil? On the other hand, if Putin either threatens to come in or does come in, or you get an armed group of people on the other side, on the Russian side, the pro-Russian side, who take up arms and are delivered arms by Putin, that might be quite extraordinary. Hello.
Yeah.
You're thinking. Okay.
I think I was very impressed by the tenacity of the people in overthrowing the president.
Yeah.
I was very impressed by that. I've never seen anything like that before.
Well, actually, there have been similar movements in Ukraine, leading to the same sort of disposition of presidents who have not enjoyed, you know, tremendous reputation. Sometimes it seems to me that the choice is be president or go to jail and get out of jail and be president. But anyway, Tom, it's an interesting point that might be the eventual outcome, and I appreciate your calling. Appreciate it.
All right, thank you, Alan.
1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. We're going to take a very short break, and we will be right back. So Sophia and Daniel and Dan and everybody else out there, just hang in.
Support for WAMC comes from the Arkell Museum at Canada Johari, presenting the exhibition Ogden Pleissner Watercolors and Oil Paintings, now through June 1st, arkellmuseum.org. Richards Fuel and Heating, East Hampton, Massachusetts, providing high-efficiency gas and oil heating systems to the Pioneer Valley for over 45 years. Now serving the Westfield area, richardsfuel.com. SUNY Ulster Online, introducing Fast Finish for adult learners with online accelerated courses for associate's degrees in as fast as 17 months. SUNYUlster.edu/fastfinish. An Alacrity Frame Workshop, Albany, New York, offering custom framing and local art in the capital region, open every day except Tuesdays, alacrityframeworkshop.com.
And we are back, and I thank you for waiting and for your patience. Sophia in Jewett. Okay, Sophia, you're on. Hi, Sophia.
Hello.
Hello, you're on.
Hello, Alan. I'm a faithful listener to your program from 5 o'clock in the morning every day.
Well, that's terrific, Sophia.
And
we thank you for that.
And I must say, I am appalled by some of the callers.
Okay.
After so many years, Ukraine doesn't have a right to exist as an independent country. I can understand why everybody is going out of the way to divide Ukraine. The people on the Maidan were both from East and West. And there was a whole group of Jewish supporters and Tartars and white Russians and Russians. So why are we dividing it?
People want
honest government.
How about you, Sophia?
We had nothing but thieves.
Yes, and what makes you think that's going to change?
Excuse me?
What makes me think?
Because Maidan, the group of the Maidan put out 5 points. Who can be in the government? A professional, an honest person without a record, a criminal record? This is their demands.
Tell us
so
a little bit.
So we could listen and read the papers and read the internet and give these people a chance.
What about the lady, Olga, who called and said...
Mr. Yanukovych was a member of that church. And according to the latest information, he is hiding in the Orthodox monastery in the East.
Well, I think that's what she was saying, wasn't it, Sophia?
What gifts? And there is a big church, Orthodox Church in Kyiv. It's a historical church. And everybody lives fine. And we have Orthodox, and we have Jews, and we have Muslims, and they all want independent, honest country that goes to Europe.
Are you Ukrainian?
Am I Ukrainian?
Yes.
No.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm not, because otherwise you would say I'm not objective. No, I'm not.
No, I didn't say that at all.
I know, but look at it. Look at it with an open eye.
Okay, you made your point. Thank you, Sophia.
Thank you very much, and I'll be still listening.
I hope so. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Okay, let's go to Daniel in Bearsville. Okay, Daniel, how you doing?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I had the fortune of serving as an advisor to the Ukrainian government back from 2003 to 2006.
Wait a second. You did personally, Daniel? You were...
Okay. Yeah, I lived there, and I had a number of face-to-face encounters and meetings with the Prime Minister at that time, which was Azarov, who since resigned. I guess the thing that I think probably bears consideration is you don't have to look much farther than the example in Georgia to have a sense of how the Russians might respond to the situation in Ukraine. They have... as they did in Ossetia and other parts of Georgia, they have the advantage of having substantial numbers to identify themselves as essentially Russian. You've already heard announcements from the regional governors in Kharkiv and other areas that, you know, they intend to organize kind of local militias. And if I was to guess as to how they might respond in this situation, it would be they would... they would look at those regions, those five oblasts on the eastern side of the country, and probably the security services in Russia, the FSB and others are already working this angle, but it would be rather than sending troops and tanks across the border, but more likely to promote the organization, creation of those kind of local militias to defend their interests. And you may also see over time an increase in the number of issuance of Russian passports to people that live there.
Well, it sounds very interesting. I did mention earlier the possibility that guns and ammunition and other things would find their way into, you know, into that eastern region. But you're a guy who I very much value calling us now. I said, Bearsville, it's not. You're from Vermont. I just think, what is the short run? Daniel, my question is, what's the short run outlook here going to be? You know, tomorrow, next week, the week after.
I think you'll see. It was interesting to hear the mayor of Donetsk, the governor of Donetsk Oblast, to discuss or to essentially declare his let's say loyalty to the state of Ukraine, which is nothing I wouldn't have expected. Mm. But in Kharkiv and Lugansk and other areas that you'll see in the industrial east, I think in the very, very near term, the regional officials have to kind of declare their loyalties. And I'm confident that tug of war is underway right now. And, you know, it would not be out of the question to assume that Putin's best bet may be simply to increase his leverage by solidifying the local regional authorities under a pro-Russian banner, whether that leads to something like a plebiscite in the future where those oblasts could possibly vote to join Russia. I suppose that's in the realm of possibility. I think it's highly unlikely that you'll see an actual military intervention, simply because the risks are too high and the outcome is too unknown.
Well, Daniel, you know, you're breaking up. I very much appreciate your call and your expertise, and I hope you'll call again, okay?
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Daniel. Bye. Let's go to Dan in Poughkeepsie now. Dan in Poughkeepsie, or Don in Poughkeepsie, sorry. Don, you're on.
Yes, as a father who lost two sons in Iraq, I hope the United States stays out of all the other countries and just worries about the people in the United States. Mm-hmm. Instead of sending millions of dollars everywhere in the world, let's take care of the people here in our own country.
Well, I appreciate the call very much. Anything else you want to say? Don? Oops, okay. Let's go to Jim in Adams, Massachusetts. 1-800-348-2551. Jim, you're on the phone.
Good afternoon, Alan. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Back when I was in the National Guard, I spent 22 years in Massachusetts. We got a publication called The Minuteman. It was a newsletter.
Yep.
And an active Army captain wrote a letter to the editor one time in this newsletter. And he's quoted a title of a book. I'm sorry I don't have that title of that book and the author available to me today. But he said in this book, this author laid out the case factually, historically, that every armed conflict in the history of humankind, we should say, has always had an economic reason contributing to it, if not being the sole cause. And you have the beginning part of the conflict where, oh, we can't resolve this, you know, at the table in negotiations, civilly. We have to have the armed battle. Then after the armed battle, things are settled at the table afterwards, no matter who seemed to be victorious militarily or not. And he proposed that we should eliminate that middle part, that armed conflict, and just have them do the other part at the table afterwards. And then my addition to that is all these people who think this is such a great hilarity of a blood sport. We, you know, who's going to go in first and who's going to have arms and who's going to fight? Putin, get him on that tank, shirtless, and let him lead his troops in the battle. Just like the kings used to lead their countrymen into battle years ago.
You know what, Jim? I get the irony here, but it's not going to happen.
It is.
So it's not going to happen. So
they all sit back and they all profit from this because war is business It's been said many times before, in business is war. They all profit from it. And who loses? The little guy pays in the end, with either his life or his treasure or both.
I couldn't agree with you more. Thank you, Jim. Appreciate it. Cool. Thanks. 1-800-348-2551. You got three free phones. I need your help. Let's go to Robert in Albany. Okay, Robert, you're on.
Hi, how are you?
So far, so good, Robert.
I guess that I'm curious. I want to see 2 points, please. The first point is, I don't know if you see it on the internet, that a lot of incidents, there's been a lot of anti-Semitism incidents within the current upheaval.
Yeah, that's one thing I want to ask you.
The main media is not talking about it, but it is on the internet that there's been like firebombs in synagogues and they're attacking Jewish businesses. And that's one thing I want to ask you. The second thing I want to say is that my personal position is that as long as it stays within the border of the Ukraine, that is that what you call self-determination, that there's other countries like Yugoslavia that was broken up, and Bill Clinton actually sent troops over to the different countries. They're not Yugoslavia. They had Croatia, Bosnia. We sent troops to Bosnia. And why is that? Is that because they felt it might spill over to other countries? And
or because
as part of Ukraine itself, though, as long as
Robert,
I think
or,
that is that way. Could you define self-determination for the listeners? Because you are a professor, I'd like to. And we talked about self-determination of a country when they have turmoil inside the country. That's my question. Those are 2 points I want to ask you.
Two good points. I must say, I know that the Ukraine back in the day, around in the 40s, had a tremendous amount of anti-Semitism. There was no question about it, and I cannot tell you whether it exists today any more than I can really tell you whether it exists among German people, which is always denied. So I can't really help you with that one. And in terms of self-determination, it's just a matter of whether or not the folks who are there have the will to do this, or whether it's going to be, the kind of hatred that goes on, that has always gone on among people of different persuasions, which we heard some of earlier in the show. But Robert, we got other people who want to get on in the last couple of minutes, and I appreciate your call very much. Thanks for doing it. Yeah. Okay, let's go to James in Colony. James, we got to make it fast. Go ahead.
Yeah, just an interesting thing from all of this call. I was struck by the thing of the Russian people not wanting to come under the Pope. And that was a line they drew. And I see that this has been played out before, and it's in Northern Ireland, where my family came from, where in the 20s, when the southern part of Ireland, the three southern counties, got away from the British crown, the Protestants in the north felt that they were under siege, and they had to draw a line against Catholicism, or at least so they thought. And they, even though they may not be particularly observant Protestants, it was more of a political Protestantism, where we're not going to come under this. Now, and they had also, favored status in the North. They held most of the political positions, public service and such, and the Catholics were frozen out. Now, I'm wondering if we're going to see this play out on a bigger scale, because obviously it's a vastly huger region, but we've seen this tie-in before with Rome. I find it very interesting.
Well, it's interesting. We had an earlier call, James, from a woman who basically said yes. That this is now a matter of the Orthodox Church versus the more secular West, I believe, is what I was hearing, and that's what was going to, and that was what the fault line was. So, I don't know. I'm not there. But you make an interesting point, James. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it.
You're welcome, Alan.
Okay. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. John writes from Rome, New York. Although I'm not blind to what's wrong in Russia, I do see it would feel threatened by encroaching Western influence to its west. The same concern was played out in the former Soviet Caucasus in the south, with NATO influences in Kazakhstan, etc. During the 2003 invasion of Afghanistan. And from Scott, who says, I'm concerned that if the U.S. takes too aggressive a role in Ukraine, the Russians would be threatened and would should react stronger. There are parts of Ukraine that are not happy with the recent occurrences. We should discourage Russia from going in and cracking down. And now we go to Andre in New Paltz. Okay, Andre, you're on. Go ahead.
Hello, Alan.
Hey, Andre, go ahead.
Hi. I just want to say that the Western, the people that came to power, they will not let the East go because they do realize that it's an industrial part of Ukraine and they just cannot survive economically. The problem is most Russian people live in the Eastern Ukraine and they're afraid of the Red Wing that came to power. I think that's the biggest issue. They don't mind being independent, but they're looking for Putin's assistant as Russian people to get protected from the Red Wing.
I'm sorry, what wing? Did you say right wing? Is that what you mean?
Right wing, correct. Yeah, yeah, from right wing that came to power in the Ukraine right now.
Right. So how does it play out? How will it play out, Andre?
Well, it's it could be a scenario similar to Georgia, like the previous caller said. It's a possibility.
Yeah, I think, I mean, you know, I may be a little out of my territory, but I think Georgia is a different example because of its antecedents, you know, how far back and what has happened. I think we're playing with a different chessboard right now. Am I wrong?
It is possible, but at the same time, Putin will not lose Ukraine or the eastern part of the Ukraine.
He won't allow that to be done. Okay. Okay. Andre, thank you for the call. Say hello to everybody in New Paltz, one of my favorite towns. Appreciate it.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
Bye. Let's go to Sam in Pittsfield. Sam, you're on. Hi, Sam.
Hi, Alan.
Yeah.
Okay. This is the way I see it, okay? So we have a country called Ukraine, and then it seems like we have two ethnic groups. So we have the Ukrainian, and then the Ukrainian-Russian, okay? So there are people, population, and I know that when people ask for independence, then destiny has to abide by that, has to respond. Now, a referendum would probably be a good idea, okay? So the first referendum would be like, okay, do you want to be under Russian or do you want to be just away from Russia?
Okay, but wait. Does the majority rule? So in other words, if there are more Ukrainians than Russian Ukrainians, but
this is the problem, okay? Because even after the majority rules, there will be still some people who would be unhappy with the situation.
Right.
Okay. So now these people, we have to have a referendum within referendum to see if they want to be with Russia.
Hey, Sam, all you have to do is vote, is count the votes. I mean, the people of Saratoga didn't vote for casinos, but we're going to get casinos. Are you following? In other words, you knew as soon as that election was over where the people of Saratoga were.
Yeah, but see, the problem is it's all these countries, they have different ethnic backgrounds.
No, we know that already. We've talked about it for now.
So you cannot, as a matter of fact, that's the biggest problem we have in the Middle East, because they created these countries, they traced borders, okay, this is Iraq, and this is Lebanon, and this, and the different people. And now we have all this mess, okay? That's what happened. So they were trying to get these people to actually agree on something they don't want to agree with.
Okay, so, we got that part. We understand it. But now the question is, what happens now?
What happens now, they have to let people express their opinion.
Okay, let's say that happens.
If they want to be with Russia, so be it. Let them.
Well, no, let them say it. But you're saying if the eastern part wants to stay with Russia, let them divide the country. Is that what you're saying?
Well, that's exactly what I say, because that would avoid the war. You see, the problem is this big, powerful countries like England and France and Germany and then America. Everybody's trying to joke in their place.
Hey, Sam, I hate to cut you off, but we're out of time. I thank you for your call. Very much appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Keep calling. Thanks. Okay, so we are out of time. We didn't leave anybody on the line, and we're feeling good about that. Support for the Vox Pop comes from Barry Price Architecture since 1996, specializing in buildings that integrate modernism and sustainability with regional materials and aesthetics. HarryPriceArchitecture.com and Ward's Nursery and Garden Center, Great Barrington, for long blooming flowering plants, miniature roses, orchids, and cyclamen, I'm so sorry, begonia, primrose, and the supplies to care for them, wardsnursery.com, and the Beechwood Group of Wells Fargo Advisors, LLC, serving not-for-profits and individual investors, Mary McDonald, financial advisor, and Joseph Steiniger, CFP, financial advisor, thebeechwoodgroup.com. Thanks again, everybody, for joining us on the Vox Pop. Remember, the conversation continues online at wamc.org/VoxPop. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Bruce Herbach. Did a terrific job, by the way. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Alan Shartok. Stay tuned now for a news update.